Hey, everybody. Thanks for joining us for the weekly Worcester Nazarene podcast, a conversation with our pastors and leaders to help us along our journey of loving God, loving people, and living transformed.
Well, welcome back to the Worcester Naz podcast. We are so glad that you're joining us for another episode. I'm Pastor Andrew here with Pastor Aubrey. And it's so great to be with you again on the podcast. Yeah. You just preached a couple days ago for the first time on a Sunday morning. That was awesome.
It was crazy. Yeah. It was crazy. I was excited to do it. It's always been since several years ago, like one of those things where I was like, I love to preach. And I think that God's asked me to do this. So it was really cool to do that at home.
That's really good. No, I was very excited about that. And I mentioned it just quickly on Sunday morning in one of the services when I was talking about Pastor Delaney coming, but saying how, you know, she has her district license, which you also have.
Yeah.
And just a little bit of explanation of that for Worcester Naz people that don't know, there's like three levels of kind of becoming a pastor around here at Worcester Naz and in our denomination. So like it starts out off of this level of like the local license, which comes from our church board, approving us that we can do ministry here locally at Worcester Naz. And then there's an entire process that you have gone through when you were in college of getting your district license, which is like all sorts of things for theology and doctrine and Nazarenedom and all this. But there's a steps to get to that point. And at that point, with a district license, you are officially a pastor, have that pastoral role. And then there's a longer road of technically four different levels of things to become ordained in the Church of the Nazarene, mm-hmm. which is a lifelong appointment, all of those things. And so you're on that process. You've completed all of the classes and you just need the experience, which is kind of where Pastor Delaney falls in. Pastor Colton is in process of classes and experience at the same time. And I love that we have so many people coming up on our staff that are in that process, because that's something that I've walked Pastor Nate, Pastor Sheldon in recent years, Pastor Joel a few years ago, and others. And I love that it's like, it's not just like a farm system for a team, but I love that we have new generation coming into our church family, walking that road towards ordination. I think that's a really healthy thing.
Yeah. Always. I mean, new leaders stepping in. One of the things that I have a student leadership team, and one of the things that I'm always telling them, it's just a bunch of teenagers who want to help Thrive make Thrive a home, you know. One of the things that I tell them pretty often is that leaders build up other leaders. And so the fact that, I mean, we've created a culture where it is normal and safe for people to start this thing means like we're having a healthy culture of establishing other people and cheering each other on. And that's just exciting stuff.
So. It is. It's really good. So back to Sunday, I was just curious of, this was your first time preaching on a Sunday morning here, but you do preach at Thrive pretty often on a regular basis. And I was just curious, maybe what is your process like? Because everybody's a little bit different. Maybe what was it like specifically going towards this Sunday of like preparing to preach Sunday morning? Is that different from what you normally do? What was that like for you?
Yeah. My preparation process was a lot more thorough and it took way more time. As soon as I got my text, I'm studying it and marking it up and I printed off things and I'm doing all kinds of different things, looking at commentaries and trying to get a heart of what the core of the text is about and what other scholars are saying. And then like really concentrating it down to like, if I had to get the heart of this text and communicate it, what do I want them what's most important? And so I kind of come up with these three things, like, what do you want them to know? What do you want them to do? What do you want them to feel? Feel is like, how do I want my tone to be throughout this entire thing? How do I want to come across? Obviously know and do is self-explanatory, but, and then I structure everything based off of that. I have a format that I like to follow. And it's just introduction and then tension. So like, How do we interact with this topic? And then what does the Bible have to say about it? So that's your truth section. And then it's application. And then it's kind of this big picture imagination, kind of what if we lived into this together? Mm. Something that I do a lot with our students because it's more of storytelling and that's how my brain works. Yeah. So that was kind of how that worked. But as I was like leading up to it, I was more and more just trying to fix phrasing and prepare my own heart. And that's when like the nerves set in and you're like, getting ready to get up there. And it just feels like the weight of the world. You're like, it feels like everything and what God has been calling me to do suddenly feels really hard and really scary. And it's like 1,000 eyes on you all at once. And
the enemy is chirping lies in your ear, all of this stuff.
Something I was just talking with Pastor Sheldon about in a meeting right before this. He's like, okay, but like everyone all week when I was like, I'm feeling anxious, I'm feeling nervous. Everyone's like, but you've studied for this. You've prepared for it. The Lord has called you. He's empowered you. He's equipped you. And the only thing that could come to mind is like, okay, but like, what if I've studied and it's all pointless? Like, what if I just wasted the last 5 years of my life, like preparing to serve the local church and it's for nothing? And so I had a whole army of people praying for me on Sunday because I was like, genuinely, if it was up to my own strength, I don't think I could get up there. Like,
That's any of us.
Yeah. So just so thankful for the family of God and the people who have come around me to be like, even in my most anxious moments, he still makes it possible. When I was 12, that was the last time I was as anxious and worked up as I was before I preached on Sunday. Yeah. And I literally didn't do what I was anxious about. Like I stepped away, I quit.
Yeah.
And so clearly it's a growth point since then. So, it was really cool to be able to just let the Lord empower and speak into those things, even in the week to lead up.
It's like another level of surrender.
Yeah.
And it's also an emotional roller coaster too. I really appreciate you sharing that, your vulnerability. And I think it's important because I think sometimes there can be this a little bit of the persona of pastors and like, we are normal people. We are real people that have real feelings and real emotions. And that can be really hard. And another thing I thought I had as you were talking, there was somebody along the way of my journey of ministry and all the things that told me, like, if you ever get to this point, specifically with preaching, where you're not getting nervous and you're not like, there's always some type of that nervous energy. If you just like don't have that anymore, then you probably don't care about it the way that you should, because there is a lot of weight to it. Like, eternity hangs in the balance with the things of the truth in the Bible.
Yeah.
And that's a really big deal. We should always have some of that weightiness to it.
Yeah. I was listening to a podcast a while ago, and the lady speaking on there just said, I know that whenever I'm about to speak and I'm nervous, I know that my heart's in it. Yeah. And that makes it meaningful. And so even just like the reality of our nerves being important, because it reminds us, like, our hearts know that this is important and our minds know that this is important, no matter how experienced you are. Like, it's just good. So,
yeah. It's good. So you were talking about really overarching love one another. That was the thing of genuinely loving each other.
Yeah.
And one of the things you didn't really get to dig down on because you hit on that so well. But one of the things in the passage, there was this specific story in John chapter 3. He starts with this story about equating to Cain and Abel. Mm-hmm. And it's like he says in verse 15, after he talks about Cain and Abel, how Cain killed his brother, all of that. He says, anyone who hates another brother or sister is really a murderer at heart. And you did read that. We just didn't get to dig down on it.
Right.
And so I was just curious your thoughts about, as you did some more digging and researching over the last few weeks, like that murderer word, like that's very in your face. Like, relational murder is kind of what I'm thinking.
Right.
Why do you think he used like such direct language there?
I mean, I'm even thinking about the words of Jesus when he's like, you've heard it said, you know, love one another. But like, if you don't love these people, it's not just about murdering. It's not about taking a physical life, like putting someone 6 feet under. It's like, if you aren't life giving, that's what, I mean, Jesus said it first. And so I'm sure John in his letter is probably just doing those same things, like echoing the words of Jesus saying, hey, I don't know what else you want me to do here except for echo what my Lord said. But even while I was studying that, it's just crazy. It's funny you bring up the Cain and Abel story, because as I was reading, I loved this thing that this scholar was talking about. He was specifically like, man, we have this story of how the contention between holy and unholy brothers and sisters led to death. And now he's offering us this other path where we can be like, okay, we don't actually have to kill one another. We don't actually have to be murderers at heart. We can love one another even when our relationship is like, man, they're doing better than me, or things are going better for them, or maybe we don't get along. It's like, okay, but you can still lay down your life instead of laying down theirs.
Yeah.
And like,
that's really good.
That's just good stuff.
Yeah.
So that one was, I was enjoying that read.
It's a great segue to my next question, Aubrey. How, like, can you think of a practical example of like laying, somebody that's laid their life down for you in the past? Like how you've seen that lived out? Have you've experienced that in your own life?
Yeah. Oh goodness. So many ways. Growing up a pastor's kid, there were many, many times when someone laid down their life for my family. It was just like super inconvenienced for them. But one really particular way that it was in college, there was just this time I was super sick, like freshman year, got super sick, and not just like the flu. Like it was going to be a tough semester kind of deal. And there were so many people who just showed up. They didn't ask what I needed. They were just like, I know that you're sick. I know that you're probably exhausted. And one of my friends, she showed up with these like homeopathic, like very nice homemade cough drops, a nice big fluffy blanket, some pudding, some tea, and like my favorite chocolate, and it's all glorious. In this like pretty basket. And it was just the simplest thing ever. But that was one of the things that really stood out to me. Like I told her the week before, kind of on a Friday, we're going home. Like I feel terrible. I was just diagnosed with this thing. I feel like death.
Yeah.
And she showed up on Monday with just a thing like, this isn't going to solve everything, but it's going to help just a little bit.
Yeah.
And there are so many other things too, but that was one of the big ones.
It makes me think about, we have this phrase that pastor has kind of gotten into our vernacular of, it won't matter if you don't, but if you do, it could make the biggest difference.
Yeah.
Like if that friend wouldn't have done that, you wouldn't have even known, like you wouldn't even probably thought about her. But since she did, like that made such a huge impact on your life in the middle of that traumatic, horrible sickness, all of that. Like that was huge for her. Really not that big of a thing to do. Like it didn't cost a ton of money. It didn't cost really a ton of time, but she was intentional about it. And that made such a huge difference. And I love thinking about what you talked about Sunday of how we, no matter how we are feeling with our own lives, whether everything is great. And like you said, the kids are fed and everyone's happy and all the dots are checked and everything is done. Then I'm ready to serve and love people. No, that's not what it's about at all. It's about being intentional and on purpose in people's lives. No matter, it's like laying yourself down, literally doing that, saying, I'm going to get out of the way so that Jesus can use me to love people really well.
Yeah.
Which can be difficult when the kids are not fed and everything is falling apart in our lives. I think that can be the most difficult times where it's like, how do I get out of the way to allow Jesus to keep moving and working through me when I'm feeling like I'm the one that needs somebody to do that for me in my life?
Yeah.
That can be really difficult.
Yeah. And honestly, I mean, I think that's the beauty in us all loving one another well, because if you're loving someone else really well and someone while you're loving them notices, hey, Andrew's going out of his way to like do these things. And I've noticed that there's this area where like they could just be served right now. They're jumping in. And now like, we're all kind of like filling each other's spots. And like, we're going out of our way to sacrificially love one another. And that's what the family has always been about. Like in a tough season, like we've always been supposed to be there. And so even thinking about like to my family, there were times when like, you know, I'd be at practice a lot. And so my family would be really intentional to set aside a plate of dinner for me. Like it was simple, but it was there. Or my sister would be at school, or my mom would be traveling, or all those different things. And like my dad would embody that by like making something just special, or having us clean the house before she came home, or something like that. And those are practices that don't just have to stay within the four walls of a home. Like these are things that we can all practice. And so that's something that I would love to see more, because I feel like that's so the heart of Jesus. Like that's just so what he's about and what we should be about. And I'm saying that and I'm like, I so don't have it together, but it's a great idea.
We are all in process. Yes. We are all in process.
Yeah.
Just a couple quick examples. And I do not want this to come across of like, I am so great because I am like you. I do not have it all together. But just coming out of Sunday, your message had just had me thinking. And I had driven my wife Sam's car on Sunday, which I don't normally do. And I just noticed that she needed gas. And she's today 27 weeks pregnant. I think it's 27 today. And like, she doesn't need to be pumping her own gas. I don't pump her gas all the time, but I just like, I went 4 minutes out of my way, filled up her gas tank. And then later in the afternoon, she was going somewhere else in her car. She's like, she texted me. She's like, oh, you got me gas. And like, it wasn't so much getting the gas. It was that I thought of her and mm-hmm. like those types of things. Like that's in the context of my marriage, but those little things where we can just love people really well, yeah. those things add up over time and it can make a huge impact.
Yeah. Yeah.
Really good.
I bet that made her day.
Well, I do like her a lot. And I try to think of little things to bless her.
I'm glad you like your wife.
Yeah. Yeah, we would be having a different conversation if that wasn't the case.
Sam, we love you.
another thing I wanted to hit on is you talked about this. I'm calling it Lazarus love is how I put it in my notes of like, man, Jesus had this love. Like you said, to come back to a place where he knew he was in danger, where he knew death was happening. Like Lazarus was very sick. By the time he got there, he was dead. He took the time to mourn with Mary and Martha. And then he completes this incredible miracle that we see. But he stopped and he wept and he did like that type of Lazarus love is what I called it. Like, what are tangible examples of that? I don't know. Like, do you have any ideas of ways that we can live that out today in 2026?
Yeah. I'm even thinking just about like, so one thing that jumps out at that passage, specifically John 11, when Jesus is sitting with Mary and Martha, almost every time I read it, it's like Martha comes at him with like all of the processing and is like, why weren't you here faster? Why, like, what's going on? How come you weren't here? And he was willing to like talk with her and grieve that way with her, and how we can do the same thing. Flip side, Mary comes and she's just like immediately weeping and bawling. And Jesus is like, yeah, I'm going to sit here and weep with you. And just the space where we can weep with those who weep and mourn with those who mourn and like, All of those things. I mean, that's a great start. I mean, there are so many people in our lives who are experiencing some real pain and death and grief.
Yeah.
And the opportunity that we have really uniquely as the family of God to come alongside. Obviously, we're not going to be able to perform a miracle. You preached a while back about healing, and we can absolutely pray, but God. Yeah. God does that.
God does the work.
God does the work. We do not. And praying for one another and being able to sit in the brokenness with one another and show up when it's inconvenient for one another. I mean, you were just saying like, even when things aren't going well, I know I kind of leaned into that on Sunday, but I think it's especially tough, like showing up and slowing down when life feels like it's still going in the background, but there's nothing you can do about it.
Right.
And there's nothing you want to do about it right now. Cause I'm with
That's
you,
real.
You know? Yeah. So practical examples. I mean, it's tough cause I don't know your life, but, even just being aware of the moments you have the opportunity to slow down.
I think that's the thing, the awareness of being like, how could I?
Right.
And being in tune with that when there's Holy Spirit promptings coming and then being obedient to that.
Yeah.
Verse 18, it says, dear children, this is John 3. Mm-hmm. Dear children, let's not merely say that we love each other. Let us show the truth by our actions. This is what we're talking about. This is Romans 10, 9 and 10. Don't just pretend to love others, really love them. Hate what is wrong, hold tightly to what is good. Love each other with genuine affection and take delight in honoring each other. Mm-hmm. And I wrote this question and I asked you this question earlier today to be thinking about like, how can we go from this reaction of, because this happens, especially like when you're talking, like when someone has passed away or somebody's in a really hard time, how can we go from this reaction of, well, just let me know if there's anything I can do, to proactively loving the people around us the way that Jesus has called us to love them?
My mom was the best at this.
Yeah.
Because when someone would.
Let's brag on Danita.
No, oh my goodness. But when someone was sick, like, or someone had a baby, whenever we made lasagna as a family, it's one of our favorites as a family. Like, she would make it. Yeah. She would make two batches, one for the table, and she'd put one in the freezer, and then she'd just like drop it off at someone's house. And she planned in advance to bless other people.
That's so good.
And so, like, when things come up, you don't have to be like, oh, like, I think Thursday's extra free. I could make another dinner for this other family. And then, like, maybe I could drop it off for them. Like, oh my goodness, I didn't plan for tragedy to strike. Well, no one does, but you can plan for the possibility of it.
Yeah.
And so then you're ready. But I think one thing that I was talking about with, I think it was my Nana. There's been a bunch of stuff happening in our family lately. Yeah. And she's just like, I called my friend. I let her know what was going on. 5 minutes later, she's standing in the hospital room with me. And it wasn't like, hey, like, give me a call if you need something. Hey, like, if you need dinner one night, like, it wasn't that. It was, I know something's going on, and it's 2 a.m, but I can be there. And it's less of like a practical thing and more of a, I'm going to decide to pre-decide to go out of my way to do this thing. And genuinely, like, my mom is a killer. Like, she's a baller, but, those kinds of things are hard. Like, you don't want to prepare in advance for something to go wrong.
Yeah.
But it does free you up in a really cool way.
And that is the heart of like something we do. Like, we have this pray now initiative at Worcester NAS because we wanted to get away from like, oh, I'll just put you on my prayer list. Like, no, let's pray right now.
Right.
And like, that's the same thing with this of like, well, just let me know if I can do something. Like, no, just go do it. Just be intentional. And you've said it a couple times without saying it, but the ministry of presence of just showing up, not giving things always, just being there can be incredibly powerful for people.
Yeah.
So just go and do the thing and don't just say, well, if you get around, let me, because people will never let you know.
Right.
It's not going to happen.
And a big part of that is when you're going through hard things, like the mental weight of trying to figure out what you need. Like, I think like you look at a new mom, they just had a baby and they don't think about the last time they sat down and had a regular meal and washed their hair. Like, they're just trying to survive. And so if you're like, hey, let me show up at your house and fold your laundry for you and cook your dinner for you, and you can be with your baby and let me do your chores. Like,
huge.
Those things are ridiculously huge.
Yeah.
And so they don't know what they need because they're in survival mode.
Right.
But like, you're outside of survival mode. So like, just like take the 10 extra seconds, think about what they might need, what they might be missing, how you could step in and just get it done.
And that's how we can do, and we'll land it here. That's how we can live this commandment, verses 23 and 24. And this is his commandment, John saying, this is the commandment of Jesus. We must believe in the name of his son, Jesus Christ, and love one another. So this is God's commandment. Sorry, let me clarify. We must believe in the name of Christ Jesus, his son, and love one another just as he commanded us. Those who obey God's commandments remain in fellowship with him and he with them. And we know he lives in us because the spirit he gave lives in us. And I wrote down, this really reminds me of this thing we talk about all of the time, loving God, loving people, living transformed.
Yeah.
That's what John is talking about. And it's not just this little thing we have in our vision frame. Like, this is who Jesus genuinely calls us to be. And when we can live that out together, what an impact we can make. And I think that is the feel of what I got from Sunday of like, man, if we could be on mission together, not just get people to church so the pastors can pray for them and they can get in the systems. Like, no, like me as a person of Worcester Naz, if I can be empowered to go and love people well, love the people of Worcester Nazarene first well, and like be pouring out, like you said, brothers and sisters love each other, what an impact that could have on our body and then spilling out into our community and our world.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's the whole thing. Yeah. And that's the call of being a Christ follower. And that's the call of being in this thing. We're all supposed to be doing that. Yeah. And so it's not even a burden. It's a gift. Right. And we get to live into this thing and live it well. So, I mean, That's just good stuff.
So good. Well, this has been a great conversation. Thanks for joining me today for the Whistler NAS podcast. Thank you, all of you, for joining us for another episode. We will see you again next week. I'll actually be back next week after our Outlinks Promise Sunday. Me and my youth pastor, Ben Smith, will be here next week to have a conversation. So you won't want to miss that. We love you. Have a great day. We'll see you real soon.